Hello and welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, and if you're looking for any Pokemon in the studio, I've eliminated them all.
Yeah.
I squashed them.
Yeah, I was in here the other day, and I was like, get that Pikachu out of here!
What was that?
Get that wobbly Jigglypuff or whatever it is.
Hallucinating.
We don't need that stuff in here.
It's incredible. So there's none here, so don't bother coming.
Yeah, this isn't one of your quote-unquote Poke Stops.
Is that what they're called?
I don't know.
I feel so old sometimes.
I hear things on TV and the Twitter. Anyway.
Twitterverse.
Open Source is the CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to cfru.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of the screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Podcast. The Guelph Politicast channel, or you can subscribe through iTunes. Today we will be talking about the proudest moment in American history, the anointment of a rich, arrogant, egocentric, and strangely tinted New York blowhard who has inherited the mantle of Lincoln, Grant, Garfield, Roosevelt, Eisenhower, and Reagan, and the list of all the stupid things he said this week. And then we're going to go back here to Canada, where all's well that ends well if you're named Duffy, Wallen, and Brazeau. Not only were they all back at work in the Senate now, but it seems all is forgiven as that controversy segues from the criminal to the political. And then finally, we will talk about the leadership races for the Conservatives and the NDP, the federal parties. And maybe we should call it a lack of leadership race because there are five people running on the blue team, one person still for the orange. What are they all waiting for? Or are they waiting for 2019?
Mm-hmm.
Why, yes.
But first, we're going to go to the home of American independence, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton will take the stage tonight to be the first woman to accept a major party's nomination. Not that it didn't happen this week, all unfurl without controversy. It was indeed very controversial because... It turned out, unsurprising, that the Democratic National Committee was more or less running for Hillary, trying to help Hillary, and this kind of seems to come courtesy of a Russian hack of the DNC.
Yeah, wasn't it interesting how those emails came out? Was it Monday? Just
it was, yeah,
like,
Sunday night, or Sunday morning.
Julian Assange chimed in as well, so.
Well, I think it was released through WikiLeaks.
Yes,
it wasn't,
so
yeah,
we haven't heard from WikiLeaks in a while. I don't think, but
no,
that was what happened. So yeah, it seems that there was a conspiracy of sorts against Bernie Sanders, sort of disparaging remarks about him. Did you get an in depth at all on some of those, or it just sounded like that they were like there was a concerted effort to eliminate him from the picture? But
I didn't go in depth. Just from the sounds of things, it was just like. The most controversial bit, I think, was there were some emails about how they wanted to paint him as an atheist, because that's the worst thing you can be in American politics is someone who
it's
is
better
godless.
Off being Jewish, right? Which he definitely is.
I think that's the worst thing. But I mean, it was hardly a terribly kept secret that the DNC wanted Hillary Clinton as the nominee, and you know she's been in the party for. Years and years and years. Bernie Sanders was an independent until last year. Look at the debate schedule for the primary debates. They had to be like whiplashed into having like debates at, you know, Thursday or Friday night, you know, Wednesday nights, times people would be watching rather than at 10 a.m. on a Sunday on a long weekend. Mm. It was hardly a surprise. Even to Bernie people, like that's what they were arguing the whole time, and then they get the confirmation. It's like, well, there you go, it's rigged. How? Just get out of here, Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Yes, who is toast?
She is toast.
Of course,
for the DNC, whether or not she wins her Florida seat back is probably up for. It's probably fairly safe. But
and she apologized for the inexcusable remarks that were made about Sanders. So
yeah,
she has apologized. However, that's. Like you say, she is history. And of course, who do they blame? The Russians. They blame the Russians for the leak. And who chimes in? Donald Trump wants the Russians to dig deeper and find more information. And again, Trump does something completely unprecedented, asking a foreign government to interfere in U.S. affairs, like requesting it.
Yeah.
As if that's cool. Like,
well, he was being sarcastic.
You think so?
Well, that's what he said today.
Does he have a sarcastic controller?
No, that's what he said today.
Oh, I missed that. So
he said it. Reporters were aghast at this press conference that he said it.
Yep.
And then he's doubled down on Twitter, saying the exact same thing on Twitter. But today he was being sarcastic. Didn't you know?
Ah.
But I don't want to talk about Trump yet.
No. Sorry. Yeah, there was a bit of bleed there between the two. But yeah,
it's too easy. It's the thing about the Democratic convention now is just like the differences. You know, there's, you know, speakers who are like former presidents, current vice presidents, luminaries within the party, senators, the former head of the CIA. Who else? Katy Perry's performing tonight. Lenny Kravitz performed last night. Alicia Keys performed on Monday night. So this is like no Scott Baio and Turtles cover band territory.
Yeah, and the guy, the Duck Dynasty guy, I don't know his name because I know very little about them.
Robertson, Willie
Robertson.
Didn't he
kick off the whole thing? I put it on and I was like, what the heck's that guy from... Or at least I didn't even know, but just to see him is like, must be a Duck Dynasty guy. Like,
yeah, the American
the B-list.
Flag.
Are they considered B-list or... Is it fair to say that? Or the B-minus list?
I think it might be unfair to people who are actually on the B-list.
Yeah,
to call
it's just
them
like
B-list.
It's a different realm of celebrity than what the Democrats have managed to find. And, not that that matters, but it does matter in a way. Like, because do we care what Scott Baio thinks? I mean...
Well, Bill Maher joked... you know, a lot of people talk about a lot of people talk about the unemployed, but Donald Trump actually shows it to you. Chachi. even though
yes.
Somebody joked, I thought Trump was trying to deport people named Chachi. Anyway, regardless, you know, yeah, the underwear model Antonio Sabato Jr. He was in the RNC one. I don't think it matters that Katy Perry is singing in Hillary Clinton tonight. Certainly it mattered to Wolf Blitzer today because he was cutting to her as often as he could as she was rehearsing. But the I don't think that matters, but the quality of speakers matters. I mean, most of the speaking platform is made up of the candidate's children. I mean, you know, we can mention that, but like, and Chelsea Clinton is introducing her mother tonight. But all of Trump's kids, I mean, and again, it's kind of a false equivalency because Bill and Chelsea have the one child. But
just make her speak three times in the one. I don't know.
But it's, you know, that's kind of the way it went. There was nobody else, and then they bring up. I don't want to talk about the Republicans yet. I was going to go into
two strikes there, bro.
I know it's two strikes. But I want to. Did you get a chance to see Barack Obama's speech from last night?
No, I didn't. I did see a chunk of Michelle Obama's speech, though.
Oh, that was
so
a good speech.
Both the O's representing. So, and a very good. And I believe she wrote it herself. I'm not sure. In all likelihood, she did. But I mean, there is someone to me who seems like a contender as well. Maybe obviously not now.
Oh yeah.
But sometime in the future, I mean, if they're going through vetting the list of candidates, she is going to be on it. With bells on. So that's my prediction. So we're still doing this show in 8 years, you know, be like, hey, see, I was right back in 2016. So
I don't.
Different caliber, totally different world of speech making.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that. And I mean, they're still relatively young, the Obamas. You know?
Comparatively. Yeah. Well, not that it matters, but, you know,
not that it matters,
Trump
but
and,
I mean, in terms of,
Hillary
they still have a lot of time ahead of them. I think somebody posted on Twitter last night that if Barack Obama lives as long as Jimmy Carter lives, he could be speaking at the 2052 Democratic convention.
Wow. There you go.
So, you know, there's still a long time between here and there that they could cook something up for Michelle Obama if she wanted to run for something. And I don't think their post-White House plans have been announced. I'm sure they're thinking about it. Traveling,
probably.
Well, the only thing we know is they're kind of sticking around in Washington, D.C. is because the youngest daughter still has high school. So
then they go hang out. And where's the relative? In Burlington? He did some kind of shout-out to Burlington, Ontario. I was like, hey, he's to Burlington. Not Burlington, Vermont.
Yeah,
home
where Bernie's from.
Home of Bernie. I don't know if does his brother live there, too? I thought that was, you know, you want to talk about a genuine tender moment was Bernie's brother, Larry.
Larry Sanders.
Larry Sanders. Sounds exactly like Bernie. Our parents worked very hard. He's, you know, I thought that was a nice moment.
That was a nice moment, yeah. except Hillary's the nominee now.
Yes.
And,
you have to.
No, I'm not saying that at all. I just say, after that, Hillary's a nominee now, so maybe you shouldn't be, you know, yelling at the former head of the CIA going, no more wars, when he has up to speak, or jeering the current president of the United States.
Because, as we know, all the Bernie acolytes are being ridiculous, right?
Bernie bros.
Bernie bros, what are they called?
Yeah,
Bernie
even
bros.
The ladies. Don't ask
me
why.
Oh, I see, yeah.
But, I mean, I understand the frustration. But I've said all along that the problem with a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters is the ideological purity they demand. And Tim Kaine is like an old-fashioned Democrat who has because he's also from the South of Virginia. Virginia mm-hmm. is still the South. So he still has some kind of conservative leanings. And a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters were mad that she chose Tim Kaine versus someone more politically progressive like Elizabeth Warren. The Hillary Clinton campaign is like, well, he is progressive. And it's like, don't even phrase it like that, because those guys have a very specific idea of what progressive is. Phrase it like this. Who is the more progressive, the Democratic vice presidential nominee or the Republican vice presidential nominee? So, and Tim Kaine, again, Tim Kaine, like Hillary Clinton, has a career of accomplishments of taking positions. And I really like what Barack Obama said last night about she's been under the microscope for 40 years. Mm-hmm. And that's why there's like so much for the Donald Trumps of the world to attack her on. It's like, because she's been involved making decisions. And, you know, sometimes when you make decisions, you make wrong decisions. Yeah. And, yeah, you get burned for it later on. But, you know, do you want someone who has a history of having made tough decisions and living with the consequences, or someone who has no history of making tough decisions and it doesn't know what it's like to order people or advise the president to order people to go into a war or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, he's just been advising people on where to put the building or whatever. Which one of the daughters is Ivanka?
Mm-hmm.
I confuse all the daughters about, you know.
Well, the father
building the buildings. I know.
Well, the other daughter just graduated college. So,
right. So, but anyway, you know, Obama was right. He did say that there isn't anyone more qualified. I think we've talked about this before. How like Hillary's resume is probably the best if you were looking at the two candidates and didn't know anything.
If you're looking
about
at
them.
The CV, yeah.
If you're looking at the CV, she wins hands down. Now, whether he'd also mentioned that everybody better get out and vote because it could be, you know, by a hair, kind of like the Brexit. I think we were talking about this a bit, that, you know, if they don't get out and vote rather than just assume that she's going to win because she's the most qualified, there could be a problem. Okay. And I did see some of Kaine's speech, and he did that thing where he was hitting all the notes, the son in the military, and, you know, he was talking, name-checking all the places, born in Minnesota, raised in Kansas, did his time, I don't know if it was as a Jesuit or under the guise of some group of theirs, and then started in Spanish as well, and of course everybody lost their minds, which, you know, he was very good at whipping up the froth, which is what they're supposed to do, right? So yeah. it was, I wouldn't say formulaic, a little bit, but, you know, he did what he had to do, and it was, I fell asleep, but it wasn't anything against him, I just had a long week, but it was
Well, that's the thing is the enthusiasm gap is, you know, it's very easy to say Hillary Clinton is qualified to be president. She's likely going to be a better president than Donald Trump, or at the very least, you know, we can leave an outside chance that Donald Trump isn't going to be the disaster artist we think he's going to be. But I think he will. it's pretty obvious. But no, I think we have a pretty good idea of what a Hillary Clinton presidency is going to look like. And, you know, she's, you know, a very matter-of-fact candidate. What you see is what you get. What the problem is the enthusiasm gap. And anything that kind of gets people riled up, like Tim Kaine speaking Spanish, or just like Joe Biden, like calling Donald Trump's platform malarkey.
That's his signature. Joe Malarkey Biden.
Joe Malarkey Biden.
Yeah.
That's going to be the real test of this is, you know, I think anyone is going to go into a debate situation. You know, people who are open-minded anyway, recognizing that one candidate talks sense and the other one talks malarkey. The question is, can she get people who don't want Malarkey Man in the office riled up to make sure they get out to vote on election day? Because this is interesting. One poll showed that 27% of Bernie Sanders supporters didn't vote. So one quarter of the people we support Bernie didn't vote. Mm. And much of his support came from outside of the party. So independents and young people are kind of vital to win.
Coming from elsewhere, yeah.
Yeah, so it's – and then, of course, a lot of his victories were also in the quote-unquote Rust Belt states, which are also swing states that are vital to be won, places like Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania. So, it's a long road.
That's where Trump won as well, right? So there is a bit of a parallel between the two.
Yeah.
But – so –
well, we're dying.
Ended up saying the T word again.
We're dying to talk about him.
Unavoidable.
So Donald Trump this week in Trump, that should be a new segment.
We need music. Trump is the man, the man with a plan.
Well, first of all, there was his speech last week when he accepted the nomination that made it sound like it was. Mm-hmm. America was Batman less Gotham City during the Purge. Everything was on fire. And
giant dumpster fire, as we used to say in the old show. Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, burn, baby, burn.
And then with the Freddie Gray case, the officer being cleared in the Freddie Gray case earlier this week, Trump said that prosecutor Marilyn Mosby should prosecute herself.
Ah.
And then came the whole email thing with him saying that at a press conference. It's an important distinction I'll make in a minute. But he said at a press conference that Russia should hack and find Hillary's missing 30,000 missing emails from her home server and release those. An unprecedented move that even his own running mate his running mate didn't disavow it, but his running mate said, it's ridiculous. If Russia was involved, then, it's inappropriate and unlawful that Russia should be interfering with an American election. And at this same press conference, Trump told an NBC reporter to be quiet. I would like to say not a great week for Trump, but as we've seen, Trump can make not great weeks survivable weeks.
Yeah, and of course, convention-wise, I loved that whole Stephen Colbert sketch, the hungry for power games. That was really, really good. And the fact that he had the nerve to get up there and take the podium. Now, it looked like there was nobody around, but I don't think they were too impressed.
No.
And I kind of watched a little bit of the what do they call it when the returns come in and they announce every state? And
roll call.
That's right, the roll call. Where they, home of the victorious Carolina Hurricanes, they do all some kind of thing, and then somebody speaks whatever language, like in the Democratic one, it was the guy speaking Lakota, and I was like, oh, this must be the moment. But, they do the shtick, I guess. But the one that stuck out for me was they kept saying One Vote Carson, which I think may be his new nickname, is like One Vote Carson, all the states that checked in. It's like, oh, yeah, Ben Carson, one of the 10 black people that was at that convention probably. So
now,
maybe
now,
that,
now.
Maybe that's
it
not
was
fair
18.
To say. 18? Okay. I knew there was a count of some kind. But, it was the state-by-state results are a bit of a snooze. But I guess if you're party, you get really excited about it. But interesting as well was the Ted Cruz getting beat on for refusing to endorse Trump.
Yeah.
But, and I, much as I don't like Ted Cruz, I kind of understand why he wouldn't do that, considering the disparaging remarks about the missus and dad as well, right?
That he doubled down on the next day about his father being involved.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous stuff. So,
yeah, what was hilarious about that press conference the next day, though, where they were asking him about it, and about especially about that Heidi Cruz thing, and he's like, well, the thing about Heidi Cruz, I love Heidi Cruz. I think she's a beautiful woman. She's, you know, okay. and going on about it. And if you looked behind Trump at Mike Pence, because Mike Pence was there.
Is he pulling the face?
And he's looking at Trump, and you could see, like, when Trump mentions Heidi Cruz, you can see visible concern on Mike Pence's face. Like,
the veins start to pump. Like,
where are you going with this? And then when Trump starts praising her, he's like, oh, thank God. And then you see him, like, visibly exhale.
Gets the rag out, dubs his head, like, oh, man.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know what devil's bargain that guy. I mean, I'm not a fan of Mike Pence because he's one of these, I want to say crazy Christians, but I did get in trouble on Twitter one time.
Oh, okay,
that
term. The evangelical
but,
types,
I mean, yeah,
say.
Well, he's one of these people who tries to politicize his faith. Let's say that. So he's, you know, someone who passed that restrictive LGBT, that religious freedom law that was really designed to make sure cake makers don't have to sell wedding cakes to gay and lesbian couples. He eventually had to repeal that under penalty of like every business in Indiana threatening to boycott and not hire anymore.
And the basketball team too. And I think it was a whole pile.
Right. So there was that. He also, you know, passed a law about having funerals for fetuses and, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
I never heard that one, but that.
And then.
But now I see completely why they've got this guy.
And then worst of all.
Fill the hole.
Yeah. Worst of all was he shuts down Planned Parenthood. Shoots down needle exchanges. There's a huge HIV outbreak in one of the big cities in Indiana, and it takes him like 2 months to respond to it. But of course, you know what would have made it easier to respond? HIV testing clinics that Planned Parenthood used to do. So he has this this history of ideology.
He's probably an anti-vaxxer as well. I don't know.
People who shut
down those clinics like that, it's the same ballpark.
But I mean, it's pure politics because like 3% of what Planned Parenthood does has to do with abortion, and the other 97% is things like
the hatred
HIV
of the
tests. Yeah.
So they brought it on themselves. Yeah, that's, come on.
But I mean, so
that's disgusting. Yeah.
That's what's problematic with Mike Pence, which I was talking about with Tim Kaine earlier. It's like you want you want to talk about progressivism. Who would you rather have in the White House, Tim Kaine or Mike Pence? I think you'd rather have Tim Kaine. I don't see Tim Kaine pushing for the closure of Planned Parenthood across the country. I don't see Tim Kaine, you know, passing some stupid bathroom bill or something like that.
Yeah, because when he appeared, there was just to go back to Kaine for a bit, that came up on the crawl and that said some of his views are in conflict with the Democrats. But I mean, it's a mild conflict, I think, comparatively, right?
Right.
You know, you have your views and then you have the views of the party, and I'm sure he will. Obviously, if he does become VP, we'll default to the party. But going back to the Republicans, it was interesting. You know, we were talking about the all-stars that were at the Democratic convention. What stood out at the Republican convention was the people that weren't there. Bush, any of the Bushes.
No Bush.
McCain. Who were some of the others? It was just like they just...
No Romney.
No Romney. No shows all around. Bad sign, Republicans.
The Senate Majority Leader was there. Yeah.
Anybody's
got
anyone.
Got booed.
Yeah.
Oh. Second place Republican presidential nominee. Got booed. Paul Ryan, the highest elected Republican in the country.
Speaker, yeah.
I believe he did get some boos, but then when he kind of got into a speech, people stopped booing him. The Republican governor of the state in which the convention was held was not there.
He ditched.
John Kasich.
Kasich's like, no.
That's another Trump foible from this week was that he pondered whether he will start a super PAC dedicated to the defeat of John Kasich and Ted Cruz when they come up for re-election.
Their own people.
Yeah.
So it is civil war, pretty much. Eh? One something that was making the rounds that I thought was interesting was, I don't know if you've seen it, Trump speaking to Wolf Blitzer, and I think it was in 2007. And Trump said that he thought the economy did better under the Democrats. So I think
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, I think the attack ads are writing themselves because it's like, I think the economy does do better under the Democrats. And it's like, what? Really? But, you know, I guess he's like, well, that's not what I meant. I'm sure the backtrack will be ready, but it'll be something just,
you know what?
Not out of left field, out of like right field, whatever, just pulling it out of the air, trying to.
But, you know, no matter how contradictory he is.
Yep.
It doesn't stick. It's Teflon. It just doesn't stick.
It's pretty amazing that how he is able to do that.
And you know what? And I mean, it's just, there's so many contradictions here. Yeah. Ivanka Trump, who you mentioned earlier, introduced Donald Trump at the Republican National Convention, and she was talking about family leave and maternity leave and equal pay for equal work. And it's like, Ivanka, you know you're not at the convention for the party that supports right. that stuff, right?
She got the wrong speech. Somebody else wrote it for her, right? Scratch out the Dem and put...
And rip. I mean, that stuff's bad enough, but there was such a... And it was in the media, too, the mainstream media. There was just such a... I don't know, fetishization of her that I found yeah. really unseemly, especially in the same week that Roger Ailes leaves Fox News under a cloud of him harassing every woman at Fox News, like having them twirl for him, like it's some kind of beauty pageant to get on the air at Fox News.
But that was weird, too, going back a bit with Trump's his comments about his daughter, like she's so beautiful if, you know... I would date her if I wasn't related to her or something like that. It's like, this is just a bizarre thing to say. Like, what?
Yeah.
It's, the guy needs to take the course. I know he won't, but he needs the class, you know.
The safe bare space minimum, class, yeah.
The bare minimum he needs is to take the class on how to be president of the United States. You said there is no class. I learned in the streets of New York.
What slayed me is that he now shows up everywhere to the theme of Air Force One, the movie Air Force One, the Jerry Goldsmith music for Air Force One.
I thought that sounded familiar. Yeah, I wasn't sure what that was.
And I'm wondering what goes through his head. Like, does he think he's Harrison Ford in Air Force One? Because I think if terrorists took up the plane while Trump was on it,
how much do you want? Yeah.
Yeah. it'd be that, or the Secret Service would put him in the escape pod, and the escape pod lands, and he's in it because he doesn't stay behind in the plane with the machine gun in the bowels to fight Gary Oldman. Yeah.
Off my plane. Yeah.
I find it curious that what's going on in his head. Is it just like maybe one of the only movies he's watched?
Well, and I don't know if it's foreshadowing too, but I'm almost certain. If Trump does get the job, that, you know, you want to talk about political assassinations or attempts, I think someone will definitely try and take him out, more so than he's going to need double the protection of any president since 9/11 for sure, because he will be a marked man.
It's worth noting John Hinckley's back on the street.
Oh, what? No. Hinckley's out? When did that happen?
Yesterday.
And he's reformed?
I don't know. I don't know the details because I didn't get a chance.
But yeah, it's Hinckley get out.
Well, wow. How old is he now? I mean,
no, I know, but that, you know, jeez,
it was almost 40 years ago.
Yeah, I know, but still.
Anyway,
wow, that's
so
amazing.
Just be on the lookout.
Side note, can't see my face, but it's like, what? He's out.
He's going to be disappointed because there. You know, we found out some stuff about Jodie Foster in the last couple of years that, you know.
Mm. Yeah, maybe he's changed his tune, but oh wow.
Anyway, we are going to take a break and turn our attention to Canadian politics because we are based in Canada, and we do sometimes like to talk about Canadian politics, too. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3 in Guelph, Ontario.
That was the Strumbrellas from their new album, Hope. That song was called Wars, and Strumbrellas, I thought they were at Hillside this year, but I think it seems they were there in 2014, Hillside Inside. Strumbrellas, available at finer record stores and probably online. There you go.
Yeah, well, no, they sound like they've been at Hillside at some point. it's
Oh, yeah, that's a very telling comment. That's right, yeah. Do they sound like a Hillside band? Answer, yes.
Yes, so it's...
maybe they'll be back. I don't know.
Well, and it's worth noting Hillside is moving weekends.
Yes,
next
yeah,
year.
They caved.
Yes, to anyway, Way Home.
Depends on your, yeah, we could... We need to make a bit of that. We need to talk about it. Is it a political issue?
I'm not sure if it's a political issue.
We'll make it a political issue.
All right. Speaking of political issues, the Senate has a few. That's the Canadian Senate. Although, like, nothing much is happening right now legislatively because it's the summer recess.
And they still get paid. Oh, sorry.
So does Peter Mansbridge.
Oh, anyway. Yes. Talk about overpaid. But anyway, in my opinion.
Anyway.
We do this for nothing. But anyway. Sorry.
Anyway, the issue, of course, being the three senators. I mean, the three senators who are still serving in the Senate, Mike Duffy, Pamela Wallin, Patrick Brazeau, of course, Matt Carb retired before this kind of all blew up. But those three are still senators. They were just suspended. They are back at work. Patrick Brazeau last week back in the office. After being cleared of all criminal charges, I believe he still has a charge pending, but it has nothing to do with his Senate work.
It was the assault charge, right?
Yes. Mm. And he does a little press conference when he comes back and takes responsibilities for his bad decisions, he said, and how it's been difficult for him.
Oh,
and... yeah, but there might be some consequences, he inferred, that there might be some political ramifications or some sort of civic action, he seemed to be inferring.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's – there's – and I guess they're having to pay back – did he pay his back?
I don't believe.
They got like 49 – trying to get 49,000 out of him to wring it out of him. But right. But Duffy is though, right? They're clawing back. Clawing back Duffy's 17 grand until it's paid, even though the charges are not the charges, the accusation is gone. It's they haven't broken the rules. But of course, right. We're going to see the rejigging of the rules. And Hugh Siegel, I think he's a former senator now. Didn't Hugh Siegel retire or step down? I think he did.
That's a good question. I thought
I'm
he was still a senator.
Pretty sure that he did. I'm not sure. But he was the one that's saying not only did the three deserve an apology, the Senate should admit its mistake for, quote, reputational damage. I think they pretty much did that on their own, you know, Senate aside. I mean, the Senate was the vehicle for that. But Brazeau in particular, you want to talk about reputation damage. Like, they did a pretty good job of that on their own. So, but I think it's to sort of not remediate, but kind of point out that, you know, no rules were really broken. But it just, you know, no rules is still bad rules, or lack of rules isn't an excuse for this happening. So, of course... Where are we going with this now? There's going to be the independent advisory board who will vet all of the future candidates now. This is the sort of the result of everything that happened, is that now candidates for the Senate are going to be analyzed by a committee, let's say. And there's really no names you would know on this board except for Vikram Veach, right? He was one of the Dragons. So,
right.
I mean, he's a business person in his own right, I guess. But I thought it was interesting that somebody from Dragon's Den is going to be one of the people doing the analysis. And
does have experience vetting people.
Sylvie Bernier, the Olympian, because, you know, all good Canadian panels and thingies have to have an Olympian on them to make them valid, right?
Exactly.
And I'm sure now that... They make a point of that with Rio 2016 coming up. Anything to talk about the Olympics, that's not why I was talking about them. But so where that's going to go, I don't know. There's been a lot of applicants. Did you apply? Where were we joking about applying for the Senate?
I don't own $4,000 in property.
Oh.
That's still a caveat.
We could work that out somehow.
Where would I...
I don't know. Buy like a little doghouse in the ward or something. It's like, yeah, it's worth $4,000. There's got to be a loophole because it seems there's loopholes. Was it? Yeah, Brazeau was one of the ones where you can just buy a little stamp of land and can be anywhere.
Yeah, you know,
you don't have to live there like Duffy. Duffy's little cottage. You get a little place in PEI for $20,000. And
I think I'd rather have a
life.
I think I'd rather buy a new DSLR camera or something when we're spending that much money.
$142,000 a year and you're hardly there. It's a pretty good gig.
That's very true. But
pretty good gig. Plus expenses. Camembert. No problem. Yes, I love to give it to the Senate every time we talk about them. That's,
you know what?
My bias shines through.
I'd be one of those senators who would like, yeah, I could expense this meal, but I'm just going to pay for it because I don't want to get in trouble.
But it's Denny's. Who cares? Yeah, whatever.
Like, yeah. No, I would totally be that guy. I'd like eat at, like, I'd get a Subway. And
do those senators exist? I'm not sure. I'm sure they do. We just don't hear about them, right?
But oh, exactly. You never hear about those people.
You hear about the people that are sort of modestly going along with it. We just hear about broken crackers and stuff.
I did note that it's sort of weird timing that to apply to be a part of the Senate, that process is now open. I think it closes on next week. But at the same time, you have all the old hands sort of coming back and getting back in it. And Duffy, of course, is, you know, the reason they're clawing back his pay is because he's like, I'm not going to pay the $17,000. That's my Duffy impression.
That's very good.
Anyway, he did hire back two staffers as well, who were used to testify against him in the criminal trial. One of the staffers used to have him pre-sign expense forms, I don't understand how it all went wrong.
His reputation was damaged from that somehow.
So it's kind of disturbing how it's business. Hugh Siegel, by the way, is retired. He retired in 14.
Steven's uncle.
Really?
Siegel? No.
I thought you meant Harper.
No, Steven Seagal. No, Hugh Siegel, Steven Seagal.
Yeah.
Larry Sanders, Larry David. Never mind.
Yeah. Well, there was also the Larry Sanders Show with Gary Shandling.
Yes, it was so confusing.
But back to the Senate though. The thing of it is that I think bothers me is, there's a couple of things that bother me. It's like, part of me is like, Hugh Siegel's kind of right. They were kind of prosecuted. Duffy was prosecuted. But what I mean to say is they were punished before the prosecution, right? Yeah. And to a degree, this was very, very political. They were being hammered for what was being seen as improper expensing. And the Senate made a political move to cover a political controversy. So Hugh Siegel is right in that regard. On the other hand, it does seem like nobody learned their lesson because the court admitted the rules are ambiguous. So when the rules are ambiguous, how do you know you're breaking the rules? And this is where common sense comes into it. It's like, well, what about common sense? What about common sense that says if you're going to go to the University of Guelph to oversee a commencement ceremony, Pamela, that is not Senate business. So why are you charging that to the Senate?
Well, that was the thing, though. But she charged that, but at the exact same time,
and
she's
gave it
two places at once.
Right.
She sent her a clone.
Right.
But she also said that her nightmare is now over. But I don't know if people like open sources aren't going to let it drop. Then, you know, the nightmare.
Again, I sympathize that those three in particular were singled out. Right, they were kind of like they became the symbol for all that was wrong. That what basically 50 other people were doing the same thing. They did it a little more.
Yeah, keep saying Macarp, Macarp, Macarp.
Yeah, they did it to a greater severity than many in the Senate.
And got caught.
But they became sort of the scapegoats. Mm-hmm. I get that, but You have to come in and say, you know what? I mean, like Patrick Brazier did this to an extent where he says, it's like, I made some mistakes. Well, that almost sounds like, you know, you're in the backyard, you hit the baseball and went through your neighbor's window. I made some mistakes.
And your neighbor was
Justin
Trudeau.
It's a bit more
than
mistakes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like they undermined, them and other senators undermined an entire, what we found out, important section still, no matter what you think of the Senate, of the government, that, you know, they ground government business to a halt because they were expensing everything they possibly could, and in some cases, Pamela, in two or three places.
And Duffy was expensing things before he even sat in the Senate.
Yeah.
It was like a week or two before the Senate, and now just, you know, da 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 da. So, complete abuse. I mean, whether the rules were ambiguous or not, they weren't brought to bear on it. And, you know, you would hope that with this new round of having the advisory board of hirings and that they will come up with a concrete set of rules saying what's acceptable and what isn't. Because if they don't, you know what will happen. It will happen again.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
History repeating. So they need to sort it out.
Well, speaking of history repeating, it repeated earlier this spring when the NDP followed suit that they were going to have a leadership convention like the Conservatives to find a new federal leader. The difference between the two being there are several candidates on the Tory side. And when we last talked about this, I think a month ago, there was one candidate on the NDP side, still one candidate on the NDP side, although I will note in Sherry DeNova's case, she has become an official candidate. She did.
She paid the fee?
She eventually, she did pay the fee.
Because I know there was a big to-do when she said, I'm not really official yet.
Yes. So, but she did eventually pay the fee. But still, I mean, it's kind of weird that it's, you know, it's summer season. And there, again, there's not a lot politically going on the summer because the government's in recess. But it's a pretty big season politically, because this is where you have all that time to be seen and to do your visiting and to go to the barbecues, to make the rounds, to shake the hands. There's maybe not as much time for that during the months when Parliament is sitting, but it's been like whisper quiet on the front of these leadership campaigns. And although Tony Clement got in I think last week, and then Deepak Obra the week before, it is oddly silent. And I think there was an article yesterday I read. It was exactly 300 days yesterday, 299 days today, till the Tory convention.
And they're still sort of feeling it out, some of them. Well, Michael Chonin has announced as well, right? But then there seems to be this pool of candidates that are sort of being considered and being floated. Like Peter McKay, who played the more time with the family card. So whether he'll be there or not, he probably will, because we know that card is completely bogus. Lisa Raitt is also being touted as well. But I think one of the issues with her is that she's not bilingual. But she got working on it now. It might not be too bad. Maxime Bernier, is he declared yet or no?
No, he's declared.
He's declared.
Bernier, Leach, Chong, Clement, and Obrey.
And Obrey.
Yeah.
And somebody else that was floated, well, two that were floated that were interesting were Kevin O'Leary, whose odds are probably minimal, and Doug Ford. So I consider them both sort of in the same pool of candidates. But would definitely make it interesting to watch if they were there. I don't think that they will win, because the establishment vote here is obviously greater than anything we've seen in the States. The system's different, right?
And Kevin O'Leary has already shown signs that he's going to be advising Tony Clement. Because they made this horrible music video together. When Tony Clement announced, where they were like on a porch, you know, singing a song.
Is that like Charlie Angus singing for Paul Doerr? He's generally, Charlie Angus is a good musician, but that thing, the last, what was that, two convention ago? I can't even remember.
Yeah.
It was like, what happened there? And with the NDP, I don't know if this is a bit of a hindrance as well, but it looks like they're, the process to sign up seems pretty complicated. You need 500 signatures from 500 members, and half of them need to be women, and 100 of them need to be Indigenous, LGBT, from diverse and visible minorities. So it almost like, and I'm not sure how they,
how do they
double check
that
criteria? Yeah. Is it census data or something? I don't know, but it's like that. That in itself is a challenge. And, of course, you have to be from different parts of the country, too. So I'm sure they'll...
Because if your name is Blair Williams, what is that?
It could be Mohawk.
Yeah.
You might be Waspy guy.
You might be a woman. You might be a man.
Yes. So, Blair Williams, you better get your paperwork together. Because, like I said, I don't know how they check that. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they do, but it's... Is it through the vine? It's like, oh, yeah, he's LGBT. It's okay.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it sounds good in theory. It's kind of a classic NDP move where we're going to do this thing that like looks good and sounds good in theory, but in practice it makes practically no sense.
Yeah. So, but it will happen. And it depends. They also have their pool. Obviously, DeNovo was declared, but some of the other names floated were Nikki Ashton, the Blakey. Not the Blakey twins, but I can't remember their names. Bill Blakey's kids, right?
Right.
Both of them. Vegas. What's it really? Brousseau. Ruth Ellen Brousseau. Howard Hampton is being considered. Mike Layton. Doerr. Gary Doerr and Paul Doerr. I've got them backwards, didn't I? Paul Doerr, Gary Doerr. There's no backwards because they're pronounced the same. And, of course, NDP royalty Olivia Chow. has also been, it's like, who will be the person? So there's lots of names out there. No one has committed. Will somebody commit? I think they'll wait, like you say, for a strategic time. This year's barbecue circuit is not a write-off yet, but I will guarantee, or at least hazard a guess, that somebody will declare on Labor Day, just because.
That'd be a good move.
That's my prediction.
So. No, that'd be a good move. I do find it hard to understand. I mean, maybe, you know, there was the article I posted the link to on our site that, you know, people are timidly kind of sitting this out because there's the presumption that it's pretty likely that Trudeau is going to get reelected in 2019 in some capacity.
That's really pessimistic to do that, though, right? It's like,
it
where
is really,
the hope?
It is completely pessimistic, and I don't. But you know, considering we're almost a year into the Trudeau term, and he's still so exceedingly popular, even though I mean there has been almost a year of stuff that he has been rightly and soundly could be criticized about, the popularity level is still like so high. So I mean it's almost it's understandable that looking forward 3 years you probably don't want to be in a position facing that again, whereas maybe after two terms the sheen is off a little. But having said that, I mean in the NDP in particular, that Rome wasn't built in a day. Jacquelet didn't come in and win Quebec, is what I'm saying.
Yep.
That happened gradually over three, four elections. So the NDP has to come. This is a rebuilding season for the NDP. They have to reclaim the left.
Mm-hmm.
They have to get back to the left of the Liberals, and so this is a really bad time for people to not show up, to not. Yep. Take a leadership position.
And my own biases aside, I hope they do that because that's where they belong, and I think that's where people expect them to be.
Yeah.
And that business went down in the last election where they were trying to they deked right and Trudeau outflanked them and went, well, we are going to run a deficit. Like the whole sort of balance books things is not what we expect from the NDP. Not that, hey, you're going to try, whatever, but Trudeau didn't promise that. And of course, the debt really, really high, and yet they didn't really gain anything from that. Same with the Tories. I hope that they're sort of leaving the Harper legacy behind. I think a lot of people hoping that, including a lot of progressive conservatives, dare we call them that?
Right.
But if they can't shed that, they're going to be in trouble as well. So I think they really, both parties, and probably through their new leader as well, need to find that home. Reclaim the turf that they lost or had changed up, because people's memory, they say political memory is a short thing, but there was a lot that happened under the Harris regime that people aren't going to forget too quickly.
Well, it's interesting that people have come forward so far. You have Clement, Ontario, Leach, Ontario, Chong, Ontario, Bernier, Quebec. The only Albertan is Obrey, and a lot of people aren't.
But no, Michelle Rempel's Albertan as well.
Yeah, well, she's not.
Yeah, not official.
I mean, declared.
Yeah. Lisa Raitt's on Ontario.
Not to offend Deepak
O'Brien,
but I mean, his sort of claim to fame was like telling people it was going to be a slam dunk. Canada was going to get a seat in the Security Council, the UN Security Council.
And oh yeah, that's great.
Then it went to Portugal.
Mm.
So I mean, that's probably not the great place.
No.
On the other hand, what did Patrick Brown do before he resigned and ran for Ontario leadership?
So, he was a slacker at federal level, right?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure I'd call him a slacker, but
he had a record amount of absences, so that's to me that's not doing your job. So.
Yeah, he didn't get a lot of he didn't carry a lot of water, let's say.
No, he will as potential premier.
Yeah, we'll see. But in the case of the federal level, it's not outside the realm of possibility. You don't have to have held like five cabinet positions and been a party stalwart for years. But having said that, I mean it is interesting that the emphasis now in the leadership race right now is east of Alberta, east of the prairies, where far from the conservative heartland, which is Alberta. And the most likely Alberta candidate Jason Kenney took himself out of the federal race to try his hand at provincial politics. So, and then, you know, of course, if Peter McKay gets in, that's Maritimes. If Lisa Wright gets in, that's another Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
So it's there does seem to be a spirit of departing from
the Western Bloc.
Right, the Bloc, yeah.
The Bloc, we're calling them. The reformists, we'll call them, because that's, you know, the Western movement was pretty much reform.
Sure.
Those people winning, like, some of the percentages they won the seats by, it's just phenomenal. Not this time, obviously, but, you know, looking at that, it's like, who wins a seat by, like, 80%, 90%? It's incredible. So, of course, you know, that base will still be there. Of course, I don't think that is going to move at all. So, yeah, you're right. I think they need to find the bridge candidate that can bridge East and West. Or maybe they don't. Maybe they're going to go regional again and sort of be the party of the West.
Mm.
And, of course, if that remains split like it did back in the day, we will just see successive Liberal governments, who they keep saying are the naturally governing party of this nation. But time will tell, and we'll see. And when was it? 2019? I should know this number off the top of my head. 2017, new leaders, 2 years to work in the trenches, and then Battle Royal. And, of course, we will be here covering well, wait, too far ahead to predict. But,
well, it seems unlikely.
That we're going to be doing the election?
That seems unlikely we're going anywhere is what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see once we kind of get back into fall. I will be interested to see if your prediction pans out, if someone's going to jump in on the Labor Day weekend. I think that would be...
Not that I have insider information.
A good time.
Because I'm not
But we'll wait and see. And perhaps when September and October comes around and people are thinking about... I always say it's like a time to think about New Year's resolutions, even though it's not New Year. But September always feels like that time.
Yes, the fall resolve, yeah.
Right, the fall resolve. I like that. We'll see what happens. And we'll see what happens next week, because we are done for this week on Open Sources. I just want to point out that CFRU does rerun our show on Monday mornings at 6 a.m. So if you are up bright and early, you can listen to us as you get ready for work or school or wherever you're going. Maybe you just get up in the morning. And
we've supplanted the BBC. Wow, that's good. So I used to listen to the Beeb at that time when I worked then.
Yeah, so I mean, if you're just up in the morning going for your constitutional... on these hot and humid days, you know, you can take us along with you. And otherwise, you can check out our website, opensourcesguelph.com, Facebook, Open Sources Newswire, and on Twitter, we are at @OS_Guelph. And, of course, you can hear past episodes of Open Sources Guelph by finding the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes. And you can connect with me on Twitter at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Sorry, did I say Twitter? I meant email. Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson as well.
Jitter. Is that a thing?
You can also visit my blog, guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
My blog is called The Spanner Book. There may be something there soon, maybe not. I don't know. Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and also Scotty Hertz on the Facebook. You can check those out. Links to the show and links to all kinds of stuff.
There you go. I don't know if DJ Sounds Good to Me is going to be here in person or whether she will be rerun this week, but we will have music for you here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and we will be back here next week with more Open Sources Thursdays at 5 p.m., and we will see you all then.